Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Beyond the Superficial. We are chiropractors and functional medicine practitioners at Synapse Center for Health and Healing, located in Eagan, Minnesota. Information shared in this podcast is not intended to diagnose or treat any medical conditions. Please consult with a primary care provider before engaging in any new activity or protocol. With that in mind, let's dive into this episode.
Hello, everyone. On today's episode of Beyond the Superficial, we're going to deep dive into hot flashes, talk about some of the main causes and some things that we look at to help improve those symptoms and what you can just do at home. I'm Dr. Natalie Schumacher, and I'm one of the chiropractors and functional medicine providers at Synapse, and we are here today with Dr. Amber Janetsky. I'm going to be asking her some of the questions. This is her wheelhouse, a little bit of her specialty here. So let's just get started.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So why don't we start with talking about what are hot flashes? Why do people even have them?
Well, this is still under a lot of trying to understand it scientifically. So I guess what I would say right now, what I would understand it as is we all know what it is. You know, you have that uncomfortable, icky, sticky feeling of warmth that happens most of the time at night, but can happen throughout the day too. It affects people's sleep. But what's happening is oftentimes fluctuation in hormones, either it's more just a change in the hormones. So it can be elevations in estrogens, decreases in estrogens. It's associated with luteinizing hormone. They're finding out that some androgen receptors are affected in this kind of pathway too. So it's that changes affect how the brain or the hypothalamus regulates your temperature. So it causes kind of a flushing of the skin, increased vasodilation at the skin level, heat changes in core body temperature that you can actually feel. And then that can cause even things like sweating through your shirts at night. And it's one of the most uncomfortable parts of perimenopause and menopause. Some of them last. Sometimes people start to experience hot flashes 10 years prior to even starting into the towards your last period. And sometimes people will have them for a short period, maybe a year, ends with when you actually enter in a menopause. And then sometimes people have them up to 20 years after that. They just linger. So yeah, that's kind of what they are in a nutshell.
Yeah. So what do you from just clinical experience, what do you recognize is a main driver of why people experience them long term?
Oh, long term? That's a good question. I don't know if I have an answer to that other than their body is just not regulating well. I think other people just come back to a homeostasis better than someone else who might have a more long-term. And so here in our office, we're always trying to get the body back to homeostasis and working as it should be. So I would think that the very same things that cause a short-term hot flash issue is just something that lingers on and is not addressed with someone who has it more long-term. So yeah, that's what I would say about having it lingering so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Versus people who just experience them for a year.
Yeah.
Versus mm-hmm. 13 plus yeah. years going on that.
Yeah. And we can get into now, this might be your next question is what are some of the triggers? Mm-hmm. Well, stress. Stress is big time.
Shocker.
Yep. Stress, or it can be physical or mental stress. So mental stress is a huge one if you're going through a divorce or just stressful times, work changes. That can be a big trigger because of the cortisol connection with everything. And then a physical stress. It can be environmental toxin exposure. Eating too much processed foods, be in an inflamed state because you're not eating enough antioxidant level or high antioxidant foods. All of those can cause the physical or mental stress and kind of lead to it. Other big triggers that I see my patients complaining or noticing a connection with is definitely eating too many sugars. Mm-hmm. Wine can be a big trigger. smoking is associated with more hot flashes, just having anxiety triggers it more, and then a higher BMI is associated with more trouble with having hot flashes.
So. Yeah. And for those of you wondering, if you haven't heard of BMI either, it's just body mass index. So it has to do with not just weight in general, but I think too, like body composition, because where that body composition, where that mass is, does make a huge difference. So going in, just having a little bit or a lot of skeletal muscle in comparison to some of the fat tissue is a huge thing that can help as well.
Well, fat holds toxins, and that just puts you in a more inflamed state. So that's part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that you brought up the emotional stress piece of it too, because I had a patient one time who actually, I don't remember if she wrote a whole book or she was going to write a whole book on how it's unfortunate that women, a lot of women go through menopause around the same time that they actually become empty nesters.
Yeah.
So having that emotional turmoil and, you know, getting rid of your last kid, going off to college,
yes,
of course happens right when those hormones start to change.
Yes.
Okay. So, what are some of the labs or what are some things that we look at specifically just to support people going through that menopause transition?
Yeah. Well, because it's often just a change in hormones that can cause it, we don't know what that change is. Sometimes there's actually an elevation estrogen at the very onset of perimenopause. It's not always because we have a lowering of estrogen. So I tell people it's hard to guess. We can maybe make some guesses and try things, but it's much better to test and know where your hormones are at so we can kind of support the body as best as we can. So what I love to run, and my favorite test, is the Dutch test. It's called the Dutch Complete. It's a urine metabolite test. It gives a lot of good information. It gives you your estrogen levels, progesterone levels, testosterone levels, cortisol levels, whether you're metabolizing your cortisol, DHEA levels. And it also shows not only these levels, but how you're detoxifying these hormones. So you can go on healthy detoxification pathways, you can go on unhealthy pathways, and all of these can be affected by diet, lifestyle, and we can make positive changes so your hormones are being better balanced. And so that's the number one that I like to use to get a good assessment. Now, urine metabolite is different than serum in that serum hormone testing is kind of just a snapshot in time at that moment when the blood is drawn. It also doesn't show you what your body is using. It just shows what's present. And so your metabolite test gives just a little bit better indication of like what's going on throughout the day. And also just what your body is actually using at the cellular level, because we're getting those metabolites and we're seeing what's being used. And so then that we can kind of see levels a little bit better. So I really enjoy that part of that test.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are there any blood tests or anything, or do you mostly just do the hormones?
Yeah. I mean, I usually pair it with a very comprehensive blood panel. So I want to make sure that the thyroid gland is working right, making sure there's not antibodies to the thyroid, that functional or free T3 levels are at a good range. Iron, anemia, those are all so important, because if you're anemic and your iron is low and ferritin is low, you're just not going to feel good either. And that's going to affect some of that anxiety and that stress level. Mm-hmm. Blood sugar regulation is really important. So looking at blood glucose levels, hemoglobin A1C, because that can affect how you're detoxifying or processing your androgens, and that can affect ovary function. And so those are some of the big ones. Also, on our comprehensive blood panel, we're looking at liver enzymes, and that can show if there's some problems with detoxification, homocysteine levels as well for inflammation, inflammatory markers. So yeah, our comprehensive panel really kind of looks at a lot of things that are complementary to getting your body back to homeostasis and feeling better.
Yeah. And I think too, that goes along with the chemical stressors, because if you do have a hidden infection, let's say, or if you do have really high blood sugar levels, those are going to be chemical stressors on the body, which is just going to make that bringing your body back to regulation or back to that homeostasis just a little bit harder, take a little bit longer.
Yeah. Now, with you bringing that up, another common test that I do run is it's called a total tox burden test. Because one thing that won't show up on the Dutch hormone test is exogenous estrogens, so endocrine disruptors, and that would be environmental toxins. And so that is also something that we dive into, is if we can help support detoxification of that, it can just help balance hormones. The other part of this is looking at gut health, and we'll kind of talk about what some things we can do to help, and I'll segue into that now, is one of the biggest things is making sure your gut is doing well. So the microbiome is really important for hormone balance because, one, healthy bacteria actually make estrogens, and that can help balance hormones, especially as we enter into perimenopause. And if estrogens are dropping, those bacteria become even more important. Feeding the healthy bacteria, just the healthy vegetables or phytoestrogens in of themselves, so that helps as well. But then bad bacteria create something called beta-glucuronidase that can cause disruptions in how you're detoxifying your bad hormones. Mm-hmm. The metabolites that we want to get out of the body through the bowel can actually be reabsorbed when there's bad bacteria present and cause problems in that way too. So
yeah,
and I think Zimmer is a good one. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I think go
ahead.
A big thing on that beta glucuronidase is if you are having hot flash symptoms because you are getting a spike in estrogen, and then you have that beta glucuronidase enzyme just mm-hmm. creating more reabsorption of the estrogen,
yeah.
playing further into that high estrogen levels, and then mm-hmm. on top of that, you do have really high exogenous estrogens that are also acting on those receptors, and mm-hmm. all of those can really set you up for a lot more severe symptoms and more long-lasting hot flashes.
Yep.
So
yeah.
Once again, just looking at big picture of everything mm-hmm. and all of that.
Exactly.
Okay. So I know there's a lot of testing that we can dive into, but what are some of the like foundational lifestyle changes that you'll recommend that your patients do just to like on their own time, what are some things that they can focus on and add into their practice?
Yeah. Well, like we touched on how much stress is so important. So decrease your stress.
So done.
A really easy thing to add in is breathing exercises. So I give my patients square breathing. That's where you breathe in. There's different ways to do it, but the way I tell my patients is breathe in for 4 counts, hold for 4 counts, breathe out for 4 counts, and hold for 4 counts. Do this for even just 2 minutes and kind of notice the shift it takes in your body. It's kind of biohacking your nervous system, and it takes you from a high cortisol output state to a lower cortisol output state. And so this is great, especially if you're doing any high intensity exercising, just to take 2 minutes after your exercise to get you out of that high cortisol drive and get you calmed down so the rest of the day you're not just amped up all day long. Mm-hmm. But you can take these little mini breaks, like if you have a stressful event happen, or just plan them, set it on your phone, do it 3 times a day. I mean, it doesn't take very long. It just mm-hmm. will do a lot for just decreasing that stress.
And I hope you guys all heard that. You don't have to remember to do it. Set yourself a reminder. I have all my patients do that. I have them do it in the room. I'm like, if you do it right now, it's going to start tonight at 6 p.m. Your timer's going to go off. You're going to take a few seconds for yourself, take some breaths, mm-hmm. and then move on with your night.
Yep. Very good idea. Yep. Going along with that, meditation or prayer. Mm-hmm. These are like bicep curls for your frontal lobes. Your frontal lobes are your higher processing areas of your brain, and they actually control your brainstem. And that's where a lot of the stress comes from, the stress hormones, body temperature regulation. So pumping up your frontal lobes with prayer and meditation helps all of this. Exercise also is a way to pump up your frontal lobes. Moving your joints stimulates the nervous system. The nervous system loves stimulation, fuel, oxygen to function properly. So stimulating the nervous system with exercise. Now that can go a little too far. Like if you're doing high intensity interval training and warrior sculpt and HIIT classes, you know, 3-4 times a week, that can be too much. You can have too much cortisol when you're doing workouts that hard. So you kind of have to learn your body. I'm not saying don't do them. I do them. I'm a fan of them. But you also have to have those moments of kind of knowing your body. If you're in a state of high stress and this pushes you too far, if you're really wiped out and tired after doing them, maybe that's not the right thing for you at this time or at this stage. And maybe you need to do more of walking, slower stretching yoga to move the body and kind of get exercise that way. So those help deal with stress. The next thing is, I always tell patients, is work on being in an anti-inflammatory state. So estrogen receptors, hormone receptors work better with connecting with the hormones that you are making if there is less inflammation around them. And so this would be cutting out processed foods, reducing sugars, making sure you're shooting for 4 to 6 organic vegetables per day, drinking healthy sources of water. That just helps you be in a state of anti-inflammatory or not being inflamed. And so that's another big step in balancing your hormones. And we already talked about fixing the gut. Beyond that, this is kind of where, other than helping people with diet, where we come in is that we can start with supporting hormones just with herbals. There's a lot of different herbal options. From there, we go up to the next level, which would be creams. And then after that, there's referrals for bioidenticals. Mm-hmm. I know our nurse practitioner that started on, Bonnie, she's diving into this. But for now, we are kind of referring out for bioidentical use too. So every case is different, and that's why we have to analyze if that's something that's a good fit. Or if any of these are a good fit for you or where we should start. And it's always a conversation with the patient, deciding where people are comfortable and where is safety and that kind of thing. So,
yeah. And some things in office, too, that we help with is even you talked to me about this, I think, a few weeks ago, about just how beneficial chiropractic is with balancing the nervous system and kind of engaging more of that rest and digest part of the nervous system, pulling you out of that stressed out state. And there's a huge, huge place in this conversation, too, for acupuncture and just the benefits that we can re-regulate some of that nervous system output. We can even change. I mean, there's been some research showing like true changes in hormone levels pre and post acupuncture. So just supporting as we go and as we build up some of these foundational things as well.
Yeah. So same thing with that. Like if your body is in pain and you're sleeping through the night in pain, pain increases that sympathetic response and it's going to cause more stress. Acupuncture, we can do actual like vagal nerve activation, do stimulating the nerves in the ears. And all of that vagus nerve associated with the gut, I mean, that is directly tied to your hypothalamus and where those stress hormones start. So, yeah, it can be a big, big help for some people.
Yeah, absolutely. And a good tool to add in if you're not seeing results right away, just adding in a few extra lifestyle things. So we did already touch on the nutrients and we touched on the nutrition part of it. But that all kind of comes back to, you know, what is the main driver and getting that information from the testing as well. But so even before you start experiencing hot flashes, I guess, what would be like your one key thing that you would tell women getting into that like 40, 45 year old age range where they're starting to slowly transition into that perimenopause to start avoiding the hot flashes?
Well, I want to just kind of take a step back too and just make people understand that, yes, just I've said it earlier on, but kind of driving home the point is that you can start having symptoms up to 10 years prior to even going through that change in cycle that happens. And so a lot of people don't know this. And so they're kind of left in the dark of like, because it can really affect relationships. Like if your hormones are off, your libido is down, you're moody, brain fog starts. I mean, these can all be associated with changes that far out. And they're actually noticing or seeing that people who start to have symptoms earlier doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to start the change earlier, it could be that you are actually going to have a prolonged issue with it. And so, I just want people to be aware of that. But I'd say, yeah, the number one thing is, I'm going to pick two, is to decrease stress and eat a healthy diet. To be not inflamed is so important because eating a healthy diet also fixes the digestive system oftentimes. So really focusing on those healthy organic fruits and veggies is probably, and lots of good healthy water. Those would be my two big, like, what can you do? Decrease your stress and eat healthy.
Yes. Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for all your information and knowledge on this topic.
Well, thank you everyone for listening. That's it for today's episode. And join us next time with Beyond the Superficial with the Synapse Ladies.
That concludes today's episode of Beyond the Superficial. Thank you for joining us and stay tuned for more episodes. For more information, please visit our website, www.officialsynapse.com, your partners in healthy living for optimal life. We would love to hear from you on how our podcast might be impacting your life. We also want to hear what interests you. Please leave your feedback on our media page at www.officialsynapse.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you in the next episode.